Hi, my name is Ricky Adamson, and welcome to Vista Higher Learning's podcast series, The Language Imperative. Vista's commitment for the past 25 years has been providing language solutions. We're proud to sponsor and share the work of those organizations, institutions, and individuals that serve and strengthen language education for all. As the preeminent language and literacy publisher in the United States, Vista's singular focus is empowering you as a language educator with the tools and research-based knowledge that you need to meet the needs of all learners. Whether you're guiding students in learning a new language, improving an additional language, or perfecting their native language, Vista is for you. Thank you for letting us share this podcast with you. Today, we have Jennifer Quinlan with us. Jennifer, thank you for joining us, giving us a little bit of your time today. I know you're busy. To give our listeners a little bit of information about you, what would you like to say about yourself?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. I'm excited to visit with you today. What would I like to say about myself? Well, I have a background in language curriculum and assessment development, and I've worked in secondary and post-secondary education for a number of years. I came to work here at Language Testing International a few years ago and have really enjoyed delving in deeper into the world of language assessment specifically.
And that's exactly what I'm looking forward to discussing with you today. So that's great. So just to kind of get us started, you know, research and reports show us how important it is to have multilingual workers in the workforce. So in terms of world language education, what does that mean for world language educators?
I think that's a great question, Ricky. And I think it's something we're starting to think about more and more. Educators are starting to think about relevance of world language programs, especially in the wake of some programs being shut down or discontinued or losing funding. And so when we can kind of connect the dots between language learning and development and kind of the needs in the economy and in industry, in the marketplace, that can be a way to kind of bolster our program relevance. I think something that we don't often think of as world language educators too is connecting the dots between language proficiency and other fields. So think about career and technical education programs. Think about the kind of the Office of English Language Education in the U.S. Department of Ed thinks of language from cradle to career, they like to say. So think of like beyond just the maybe 2 or 4 or 6 years of my language program in a middle school or a high school, but also maybe lifelong language development, thinking about even adult and continuing education programs. Sometimes as language educators, we don't always connect to our community or to other disciplines and think about like, what does multilingualism mean in these spaces? And how can I as an educator connect with those professionals? But also, how can I help position my learners to like leverage their language skills in those contexts when they're not in my French class anymore, for example?
And with programs being cut or the funding disappearing for world languages, what do you think world language educators or any of us could say to administrators?
That's a great question, Ricky. And those conversations can be really difficult and complicated and also really enlightening. I will share an example. I was at a Kiwanis meeting last week. Actually, it's a community service organization like the Rotary or some of these, with business leaders who attend and discuss needs of the community. And this particular community, they have a high demographic of Somali refugees. And some of the conversation was around the economic needs of the community, some of the cultural and service needs, particularly responding to this influx of refugees over the last handful of years. Well, these conversations are really compelling and critical conversations to the well-being of a community. And the school administrators have this opportunity to consider what are the demographics of my community, and how might multilingual assets, you know, students coming out of the school system with multiple language abilities, how might that be a benefit to our community, or how might that impact some of the needs that we're grappling with in our community? And those could be very simple things, or very complicated, or very high level reward kind of things. And so I think administrators have a unique opportunity to think about, when I'm sending students out from my school system, my district, or whatever, what are some of the unique assets that hopefully their educational experience here imbued them with? Did we provide a great foundation for academic success in math and sciences? Did we provide an opportunity and academic foundation for global citizenship, or resilience, or ability to problem solve? The World Economic Forum actually talks about specific skills that will be needed in the job force in the next 5 years. And multilingualism is in the top 20 of these skills on a global scale. In the U.S., ACTFL has done some research about what U.S. employers need, and they're experiencing language skills gaps where they are actually losing business due to a lack of language skills in their employees. Employers expect an increased need of multilingual employees. So when our administrators understand these kind of economic implications alone, that can help them be empowered to consider how valuable the skills of language learning are for the students that we're trying to educate and develop into really meaningful members of our society and contributing and successful members of our community, our national scale, or even global scale, wherever their lives might take them.
And, you know, you mentioned some things that made me think of a couple of different scenarios in my head. But, you know, we're trying to convince administrators of the importance. And, of course, world language educators know the importance. But I just think of my own teaching, and I remember times when students were hesitant to take another language or to take an additional year. It's more for me to study. It's more testing, things of that nature. So for them, what could we say to our learners about what the advantage is for them, what it means for them?
That is also a great question. And, you know, we hear from students from around the world talking about why language is their superpower, or why it's important to them to study a language. And there are a wide, wide range of reasons, or compelling, I guess, insights that students share with us that I think are really, they really are actually insightful. Some students talk about, when I told my boss that I speak Spanish and English, I got a raise. Or when I signed up for the Army, I had an ACTFL certificate of my Spanish ability and I got a $2,000 signing bonus. But also things like, I just feel like I can solve problems better because I know how to look at a situation and consider it from multiple angles. And I learned how to do that by learning another language. Or I learned how to identify patterns and it actually helped me strengthen my math skills. Or I have just such a deep sense of empathy now that I've been working with my speaking partner who lives in Italy, and they're trying to learn English and I'm trying to learn Italian. And I just realized like how big the world is and also how small the world is. And it's changed my viewpoint on all kinds of things, like people are ultimately the same. Or it's changed my viewpoint on some of the problems that we struggle with, or the things we worry about, are very similar no matter where we are. There's so many different kind of compelling motivations for studying a language. And I think really the most compelling reason is the one that matters to the student. So as academic, you know, as guidance counselors, for example, or teachers or any academic professional, when we're trying to help students discover their interests and discover what they're good at and discover things that help them to build into the people that they want to be, we can include language learning as part of that discovery and exploration. And then when they're making choices about, gosh, well, do I take band or choir or French, I have to decide because I only have one credit hour that I can spare, they can make these decisions more, from kind of a more thoughtful or informed place. More so than just saying like, well, learning languages is fun, which for a lot of people it really is, and it can be exciting and adventurous. And we can also maybe have a little more information to go with that to help students think a little bit from a more informed place about why might I want to continue studying a language or start studying a language.
And would you say that with students, with administrators, with educators, that the language testing helps send that message of its importance and send the students a message that they can do this and they're on the right track? What would you say about that?
Yeah, I think assessment does play a big role here because on a few levels. One, regular assessment throughout language learning. So let's say, you know, at the end of every year, like I took it after Spanish 1, after Spanish 2, after Spanish 3, after Spanish 4, whatever. This gives us a sense of progress monitoring a little bit, right? And an opportunity for a student to be able to see like, I am really gaining some skills here. I'm really developing something like that. The assessment also helps kind of officialize, if that's a word, but kind of make official the sense of a skill acquisition. So more so than like, I'm developing a hobby. I'm learning how to do canyoneering. And I think I'm getting pretty good at it, but I don't really know. Sometimes when I taught, I would say to my students, like, how do you feel like your language is developing? Well, I don't know. I don't really know. If I went to Taiwan today, I'm not sure if I would feel like I'm going to be good or I'm going to be bad. Well, assessment is a tool that we can use to help students have a sense of how they are doing in the language. And that can be really informative, empowering, and like exciting, motivational. Also, using assessment as an official credential gives them a tangible token, I guess, of what their language means, which they can take into their workplace, whether it's a part-time high school job or they're applying for a career or they're trying to qualify for a scholarship or they're putting it on college application or anything like this. It's a very tangible, recognized credential when you have an official ACTFL test, for example, and that it means something, not unlike if you won a national recognition in a math competition, you would probably put that on your resume or you would be really proud to say to a potential employer where that might be valued. Also, did you know I was a national math award recipient, whatever it was, you know? Also, did you know that I'm certified at in the language of, you know, whatever, Russian, and this means that I have these particular skills or I can do specific jobs both in Russian and in English?
That's, you know, what I hear with all of that is just how it validates language learning. It validates what the students can do. It validates what the teachers are doing, which I think is so important. Because it shows that we're not just the teachers that make piñatas or crepes in class, which unfortunately I have heard other teachers say that's what they would think, you know. And I feel personally that those assessments, you know, it validates what we're doing. And for the students, it validates what they're learning so that when they're sharing that they can speak on a resume or know other languages, it's carrying some weight so that the person they're talking to is not thinking, okay, yeah, you went in there and you played a few games. You know, I took 2 years too. that sort of thing. So, you know, I think when we frame it that way, at least for me, that it kind of gives a view that we can also then take that to administrators as well to validate what we're doing. But what would you do, or how would you explain the instance of one year a student takes the test and then the next year they score lower?
This does happen sometimes. And this is an interesting nuance with assessment. We talk about U-shaped behavior, both in kind of the social sciences, but also in language acquisition. And U-shaped behavior is essentially where, if you think of the letter U, so like you might exhibit ability in your language area at a certain point, like the top of the U, and then the next year, maybe, for example, like you said, Ricky, you might test lower, and it might look like the lower part of the U. And then the next year, you might test higher again, like the upper part of the U. Now, this isn't a linear thing or that happens on a specific time frame, and this type of behavior can be kind of more pronounced or less pronounced. But essentially, what's happening is natural brain development. In second language acquisition, when we think of U-shaped behavior, we kind of see this notion of like language ability seeming to be like really strong and then kind of almost looks like it goes backwards a little bit and then over time will rise again or improve again. Well, what's happening here is the language user is kind of experimenting with maybe new forms of the language, taking more risks, because when they're at that kind of high point of the U, let's say the top left part of the U, they have enough language ability to know how to take more risks, to explore kind of new ways to apply skills that they mastered before. And so they might apply it in new ways that they haven't necessarily formally learned, but they have enough mastery to understand that this concept might apply in a different context or in a different way. Well, what happens if I take that word and try to convert it from an adjective to an adverb? You know, for an example, right? Or what happens if I take this way that I'm conjugating in the past and try to conjugate it in a different way based on what I know, but also kind of making guesses or taking risks despite what I don't know. And so this can lead to more mistakes. This can lead to kind of application of language in the wrong context or some grammatical errors. But it also means that this is development. So even think of this like in development of a child. When the child knows, like, you don't touch a stove because it's hot, but they don't know, what if the stove's turned off? Can I touch it or should I not touch it? Or what if the stove is turned off, but it was on just a little bit ago? Could I touch it or not touch it? I mean, this is kind of a silly example, but the idea is as the child's brain is developing, they come to understand eventually all of the criteria around when you may or may not want to touch a stove or ways that you might test if it's hot or whatever, right? So all of these contexts are part of evolving knowledge and mastery of the you know, topic at hand. And the same is true with language. As we learn certain forms and develop certain language ability and continue to develop into higher levels, part of that is actually making mistakes and having opportunities to learn from those mistakes and correct them or learn more material and eventually continue developing and understand the many different criteria around language use in various contexts. So one way to kind of understand that and not get hung up on like, oh my gosh, I scored at this level this year, but last year I had scored at a higher level. I must be failing. Instead, we want to kind of zoom out and think about, hey, let's look at for example, assessment reporting over time, over multiple years or multiple instances of testing, and look at kind of a longer game type of view. Also think about like practicing giving each other feedback over time and having opportunities to experiment and explore with language in low stakes scenarios, as well as in assessment scenarios. So the students don't only find out their ability, let's say, through assessment, but that they have lots of opportunities to get feedback on how their language is developing. And they might be recognizing in themselves some patterns like, oh gosh, I keep making mistakes about how to use that word as an adverb, and I keep using it as an adjective instead. I keep saying goodly instead of well, for example. Well, lots of opportunities to practice, receive feedback, give feedback, help us identify, well, yeah, I'm still experimenting or exploring how to describe the positive nature of something in an adjective as well as in an adverb form.
You know, it seems to me that that's a great tool, those things that you just mentioned, for teachers in anticipation that it might happen, not that they're expecting it to happen, but that it could happen. If they doing this all along would lower that anxiety for students, would lower that discouragement. At least that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it really normalizes the development that we expect, that there to be kind of up and down in evidence of language mastery. When we make that the normal thing that we recognize, we notice, we give feedback on consistently, then like you said, Ricky, it decreases that affective barrier or that like anxiety about like, gosh, I have this one time a year when I have an idea of how I'm doing on language. We hope that there are many, many, many opportunities throughout the year that they have an idea of how they're doing and how they're developing.
And Jennifer, on the topic of language assessments, we know that the revised ACTFL proficiency guidelines were released in April. So I'm sure teachers are wondering, what impact will that have on assessments?
Sure. And really, the revised guidelines that came out this year, for those who have kind of taken the time to dig in, there's not a ton of changes, I guess I would say, in terms of assessment specifically. We have updated our documentation and things accordingly, and some of the score reports or things like that will have some revised language. But ultimately, I think one of the biggest impacts of the revised guidelines is a little more focus on what makes up proficiency. So they talk about the FACT, the functions, the accuracy, the context or content, and the text type of language, and that these are all the elements that are considered when we consider language proficiency. And sometimes that's kind of ambiguous for people. They think of language ability being like, how fluent do you sound? Or sometimes even language teachers are hung up on like, how accurate is your language? And if you're accurate and you're making, you know, your grammar is good and you use good vocabulary, this means you're really a master of the language. And ACTFL has this guidance with the guidelines that helps us understand more holistically, I guess, all of these elements of proficiency. So when we think of functions and tasks, we think of the types of activities that an individual can carry out. Maybe in writing, it might be, can they complete a form versus write a set of instructions versus write an essay or a research paper or participate in an online discussion forum. You know, these are some examples of language functions. When we think of accuracy, pretty common, right? We're thinking of grammar, syntax, vocab, cohesive devices, sociocultural knowledge, things like that that are conveyed for the accuracy of the language. When we think of context or content, this might be situations or circumstances where an individual can achieve their linguistic goals, whether it's writing or speaking or whatever. So the topic areas that they're able to address, can they talk about just themselves and their immediate familiar contexts like my family or my neighborhood? Or are they able to talk about other or more abstract ideas like global topics or hypothetical concepts? And then when we think of text type, that's actually the length and complexity of the text that an individual can produce. So whether it's words and phrases or sentences, paragraphs, multi-paragraph discourse. So all of these things are considered when we think of proficiency. And an assessment, when it's a proficiency assessment, like ACTFL tests, then the target is that all of these elements of language be assessed through the items that are written in the tests.
And, you know, I think that will put teachers' minds at ease that with these revisions, they're not having to throw everything out that they've been doing proficiency-wise. But to me, this just gives much more guidance. They are guidelines, of course, but it, as a teacher, as a former teacher, seems as it would give me more guidance. It would help me hone in on certain things that I could do with my students throughout the year. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think you've kind of framed that nicely. It really, I think the revised guidelines provide a bit more clarity, a bit more description, and hopefully make the some of the rewording in the guidelines and the revised guidelines hopefully help people from different industries or backgrounds also better understand what it means to be a novice level speaker, or an intermediate level, or an advanced level, so that it's not just academics who understand what these guidelines mean, but also these people who are in the workplace or the government sector or other sectors as well, who are referencing the ACTFL guidelines.
And, you know, we know that in language education, which includes the language testing, we want to give every student a chance. We don't want to leave any students out. So what should teachers think about in terms of equitable access for language testing?
This is a question that does come up a bit more and more frequently, and especially with some of the conversations around diversity, equity, inclusion, as well as kind of the social-emotional intelligence that we're thinking of and ways to consider like universal design. All of these kind of themes running out there in education right now circle back to, we want our students to feel like they have equal access to opportunities, and learning and assessment falls under that umbrella. So some things to consider are trying to find assessments for all of the languages that might be available in your school and there, or that might be represented by your school population. And sometimes there aren't good assessments available. I was speaking with a principal who has students, there's a large Karen population in their region, and they have students who speak Karen, and they are not finding any assessments in Karen, but they want their students to have the opportunity to certify that language and qualify for the Seal of Biliteracy, for example. So many state departments of education have worked at kind of standardizing opportunities for assessment, whether it ends up being a individualized performance assessment or a standard external assessment like an ACTFL test or whatever it might be. But that's one thing to think about is, can we provide opportunities to certify the language of all the languages in our student population? And then thinking about protection and privacy protection for our students. So that might not seem like an access question, but really it is kind of a question of ensuring everyone's privacy is protected for students as well as for staff and adults. So we think about FERPA a lot in terms of adults, but when it comes to children, COPPA compliance can be really important thing to think about. So FERPA would be for ages 14 and up, and COPPA would be for those younger learners. So that's something to think about too. We want to ensure that personal identifiable information of our students is protected, especially in this day and age where identity is compromised in online interactions a lot. and in this day and age where we use a lot of online tools in educational contexts, in our classrooms. We're using YouTube, and we're using Learnosity, and we're using external assessments, and we're using online textbook activities, all kinds of things. So we want to make sure our students' privacy is protected. And then I think also in terms of equitable access, ensure that accommodations are acknowledged, and that we make appropriate accommodations in the that whatever assessments we're using, make appropriate accommodations. So there's WCAG compliance, which is Web Compatibility and Accessibility Guidelines. That's a federal level thing. Our districts typically have some various processes for accommodations. There are 504 or IEP plans. We want to acknowledge those and recognize and make sure that in assessment as well as in their learning situations, that students have their needs met through appropriate accommodations. And I think not just thinking of your world language learners only, or just your ESL learners or your AP students or whatever, but extending the language testing opportunity to anyone with language ability, which we talked about a little bit earlier too, that that might be kids in CTE programming that we never thought of before, or that might be that we don't just think of home language survey where the language is something other than English, but we think of all of our students and anyone who might have language ability. How can we raise awareness and increase opportunities for all of them to be able to test and certify their language ability?
You know, it's not just exciting for students at this point in world language education with the ability to take these assessments, to get the syllabi literacy, to move ahead. It's also, to me, a very exciting time for teachers to be in world language education, because the spotlight is beginning to shine on world language education and the need for it. And I would say, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but these assessments are going to help shine that spotlight a little more.
I think that's really true. And, you know, earlier this spring, I was part of some summits hosted by the Department of Labor and the Department of Education out in Washington, D.C. And one of the summits focused more on raising awareness of the seal of biliteracy and multilingualism among employers. And the other was raising awareness of employment opportunities thanks to the seal of biliteracy and multilingualism among educators. So you can kind of see how the Department of Ed and the Department of Labor themselves are trying to do better at talking to each other, but they're also trying to help raise awareness among the populations they typically communicate with, right? Employers and educators, to kind of help them start recognizing and talking to each other. And one of the common tools in that communication is having ACTFL certification, having a language assessment that gives an official ACTFL score that means the same in every sector, in every population, among government and military or commercial or academic or educational contexts. And so that, just like you said, Ricky, that assessment is becoming a tool for leveraging cross-communication that on a national level is being thought of as important for raising the bar in our educational standards, for improving our domestic and international economic status, as well as like our national defense and our national security and some of these issues that are really important on a, you know, completely different kind of landscape than what maybe we think about in our traditional language learning circles.
Jennifer, we have spent a great time. I have loved this conversation with you, and it has gotten me even more excited about the field of world language education today. But what would you like to leave our listeners with? What's something you really want them to take away? We want them to take everything away, obviously, but what is something specific you would like for them to take away today?
I think that we are in a time in language education where assessment plays a role like it never has before, and it can really help us connect the dots between what I'm doing in a language classroom to what the needs in my community might be and employment opportunities in my community to what the values or opportunities on a post-secondary educational level might be to what the opportunities might be on a national or global scale. And we've spoken about these types of things in language education for years, in theoretical ways, in some practical ways. And today, I think official ACTFL certification means more than maybe it ever has. And it's really, like I said, it's kind of this tool that can really help us connect those dots. And it's a multi-directional flow here where, as language educators, we can produce something of value that is tangible and measurable to our employment or higher ed opportunities, but also those contexts, those populations can help us understand in our language education, maybe I want to tailor what I'm doing in my classroom to be a little bit more practical or be a little bit more immediately applicable to daily life for my students. And yes, maybe though my students are learning Russian in Wisconsin and they don't encounter a lot of Russian speakers, we're in a really interconnected world, and there might be ways for my students to use their Russian in meaningful ways that have an impact on their educational and professional and personal pursuits well beyond the classroom. And that official assessment, official ACTFL certification can really open doors in ways that are just, I think, mind-boggling today and maybe even beyond our own imaginations.
And I just love that. As I said, it's exciting to be in world language at this particular time. Well, Jennifer, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to come and talk to me so that our listeners can learn a little bit more about assessment. And I hope this won't be the last time we get a chance to chat.
Thank you, Ricky. It's really been a privilege to talk with you today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. As an educator, you have the power to reimagine and reshape education. Vista Higher Learning is committed to giving you the best programs, resources, information, and support to ensure that your students succeed in school and in life. We are committed to being your partner in education, and thank you for letting us be there for you and your students. For more information about Vista solutions for your K-12 classroom, visit vistahigherlearning.com.